Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of the Real World Fitness Podcast. We've got a great show for you this week. We have a fantastic guest I recently interviewed. He is a popular blogger, successful author, and at one point, until he just got way too busy with other things, was the most in-demand personal trainer in the New York City area. He is considered one of the top bodyweight gurus in the world. And we're going to speak with him in just a few minutes. His name is Al Cavadlo. Yeah, guys, you heard me right. Bodyweight exercise. Great thing for those of you that can't make it to the gym, can't afford a gym, there's no gym nearby, or you just don't have room to have any exercise equipment in your home. Great thing about body weight, according to Al, is all you need is your body and the floor. And as he says, if you don't have a floor, then you've got some really big problems. We'll get to that interview in just a few minutes. First, I'd like to take a moment and thank everybody once again for all the kind email feedback I've received about the first two shows. Really appreciate it. And I'd also like to say thank you for those of you that listened to my request for questions. I received several questions from listeners this week, and we're going to address two of them right now. Actually, it's two different topics, and one of those topics I received several questions on. That's probably the most commonly asked question to fitness professionals all over the world is, how do I lose weight or how do I lose body fat? And that's the question I had four of. Out of nine emails, I had four asking about losing body weight. So I'm going to throw a few of my favorite simple little tweaks at you that can dramatically increase your fat loss success without any real pain, without any real restrictions. I'm not saying they're the only thing you should do, but you add these little tweaks to your current life and you will see a difference. We'll get to that in just a second. The other question I want to address was directly in response to my interview with Michael Elliott last week. When we were talking about our favorite gyms and the atmosphere in a gym and the energy in a gym, I had a question from a young man saying, I'd like to start working out. I don't really know where to start. Should I join a gym? Should I work out at home? And if I join a gym, what kind of gym should I join? So that's a great question. And it's probably not as common as the fat loss question, but probably a pretty common question that's in people's minds. So let's start with, should he join a gym or work out at home? The problem for most people with working out at home by yourself is self-discipline. It takes a lot of self-discipline and a lot of determination to be able to do that. If you get dressed, jump in the car, or get in the van that's being scheduled to pick up at a certain time, or go get on the bus to go to the gym, you have your schedule. And you're going to go and you're going to get a pretty good workout, maybe a great workout because you went to the trouble of getting there. If you're at home and you're by yourself being the key there. If you've got somebody you work out with, that's another commitment that helps. If you watch a certain exercise program that's on at a certain time of the day and follow along, or if you take a class online like my exercise classes in blindcafe.net, then you have that commitment of that time. So that increases your chances of success. But if you're just going to do your push-ups or do your squats or do your little bit of weight training or get on your elliptical, then it's difficult because there's always something else that needs to be done and you can get to it later. So unless you've really got strong self-discipline, I don't recommend working out at home for most people, not by themselves. And if you don't believe me, check out Craigslist for all the great deals on used Bowflexes and Tread Climbers and Total Gyms for all those other people who had the best of intentions. And it didn't work out. And here's another factor. If you're going to buy some equipment for your home, those Tread Climbers and Bowflexes and all those other pieces of equipment, they cost more than a gym membership. prices of gym memberships are very reasonable, and for what you pay for a Bowflex, you can probably get a 2 or 3 year membership in most of the big box commercial gyms. I'm not saying, you know, the exclusive country club gym, but the big national chains are very reasonable. Okay, now that we've established my preference for most people is to go to a gym, and the irony of that is I train at home, but I've been doing it for 40 years, and I just got tired of the gym options that were available to me in the area. Big factor of convenience and just no place I really enjoyed. So here are a few factors in selecting a gym. Convenience is a very important one, because if you have to travel too far, if it's inconvenient for you to get there, once you get past that honeymoon phase of being excited about going, 3 times a week might go down to 2, down to 1, down to I'll go next week, down to I'll start right after my birthday next month. So it's got to be convenient. Again, that kind of goes with the determination factor, but that's the way people are. We're all in a hurry. It's a busy, busy, busy world, and everybody's in a hurry to go places, and they're not going to spend a lot of time to go someplace like the gym. Another factor is, of course, cost. So you have to be able to put that into your budget and determine whether or not it's a feasible thing for you. Most every place nowadays does monthly payments that are very palatable, $10, $15, $20. It's not like when I joined my first gym where you had to pay upfront for, what was it? My goodness. I don't remember the amount, but you paid upfront for a life membership and then paid an annual maintenance fee to keep it current. I think 40 years ago, my parents signed me up at a Victanias, and they might have paid $300 or $400 for that, maybe even more, which was a lot of money back then. But today, that one big chain is always talking about $10 a month, and all the other ones are in line, $10, $15, $20 a month. Okay, now there are 3 different types of gyms out there, basically, and you have to determine the one that's right for you. There are the big box commercial chains, which have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, lots of space, lots of equipment, lots of glitz. They have nice wet areas with steam rooms and whirlpools and saunas and all kinds of good stuff. Some of them have a restaurant or a bar attached to them. They're a whole big social thing. Then you have the community center type gyms, like a JCC or a YMCA. And I really can't comment much because I have virtually no experience with them, but they are an option. I think you might find, when we get to the subject of assistance, that you might find a little more assistance in those facilities than in one of the big box gyms. But beyond that, I don't know very much about them. The final option are the little neighborhood hole-in-the-wall mom-and-pop type gyms. I was trying to think of the right word there. Mom-and-pop type businesses. And as you know, most mom-and-pop businesses have been eliminated by the big box stores, so they're few and far between, but they're still around. And they're my personal favorite for a variety of reasons. They're not going to be as big. They're not going to be as crowded. Okay, you're not going to have as big a variety of equipment, but you don't need 5 different bicep machines and 6 different squat racks and 25 ellipticals and treadmills all lined up. You just don't need all of that. Secondly, let's call our little neighborhood gym Joe's Gym. Joe is sitting behind the counter, probably working 60 to 70 hours a week because he's not making enough to have full-time employees. He's not getting rich. If he's been in the business for any length of time, he's there because he loves what he's doing. He loves fitness. He loves exercise. He loves helping people. And he probably knows a lot. So if that gym has been open for any length of time, I can pretty well guarantee you that guy sitting behind the counter knows his stuff and loves to share the knowledge. Now, going back to the big gyms, good-looking girl or guy behind the counter's only job is to sign you up, get that credit card, get you locked into those convenient monthly payments. That person may not even work out, but their job is to get you signed up and then hand you over to a member of the personal training staff if you need help. And of course, that personal trainer's job is to sell you a package of training sessions. It's all about the dollars, of course. If you just go in and say, can somebody just show me around and give me a little idea of things, chances are very slim. They're going to tell you, if you don't already know how to work out, we strongly suggest you hire one of our trainers. Don't know how it is in those community center gyms, but I'm going to guess the trainers are there still, but probably a little less expensive because it's a community center. It's not a big gym. It's not a retail environment. Then we get to Joe's gym, and Joe's going to help you himself. He might have a few trainers in there that bring their clients in, but they're going to be reasonably priced. They're going to be helpful. And here's the big thing. You're going to get help and support from the other people working out in there. That's my other dislike of the big chain gyms. It's a busy environment. Everybody's in a hurry. Everybody's got their earphones plugged in. They're in their own little world. And it's not really sociable, except for the people that are there purely to socialize. You go into that Joe's gym, and you're going to discover a wonderful little community that you would never experience anywhere else. You might see, well, I'm in Miami, so we'll just use the Miami Dolphins as an example. You might see that 300-pound lineman that plays on the Dolphins in there working out alongside a 17-year-old high school wrestler, alongside a chubby middle-aged guy that just wants to get in better shape, alongside an 80-year-old woman who's been running marathons her whole life. You'll see black, you'll see white, you'll see Latin, you'll see all ages and sizes and shapes. And they're all there for one common goal: to get healthier, to stay healthy, to get bigger, stronger, lose body fat. Those are the individual sub-goals, but they're all there for that common goal. And this is the only place you'll probably ever see those people interacting. Where would you see an 80-year-old woman chatting with a big 300-pound linebacker or a 17-year-old high school kid, probably spotting that big lineman who, you know, he'd be afraid to talk to on the street, or that older lady who he wouldn't even bother with on the street? So it's this wonderful little, what Dan John calls, intentional community of people that you'll find in that kind of a gym. And as a newcomer, as a beginner, you will be welcomed into that community and they will help you. I've never been in any small gym anywhere in the country that I walked in and I was not made to feel welcome. You need any help? You need a spot? Need me to show you where anything is? And people just do it. It's just the nature of the people you find in those kind of gyms. So I think I've covered a lot of things here: cost, convenience, why you should go into a gym as opposed to at home, and why I suggest the little neighborhood gyms. Now, I'm not saying you can't work out at home and get a great workout. You can. And our guest today, Al, will talk to you about that. It just takes more determination. Now, on to that second question: fat loss, the most popular subject there is. I'm going to just throw a few quick little tips and tricks at you. First of all, never stuff yourself. Recently had dinner with friends of my wife, co-workers of hers, went to this great Italian restaurant that we love, and the woman ate this huge meal of pasta and meatballs and chicken parm and everything that was baked in a cheese crust, along with a couple garlic rolls and three or four sodas. She said, "I'm so stuffed, I can't breathe. What's good for dessert here?" Now, that's just not good. So never stuff yourself. Eat until you're content, not full, not stuffed. Allow at least 3 or 4 hours between your last meal and the time you go to sleep. And I don't mean 3 or 4 hours in which you're snacking in front of the computer or the TV. No food for 3 to 4 hours. Give that food, that last meal, a chance to digest. Because if you eat and you lay right down, you don't sleep as well. Your body is working all night to digest that food, and you don't get good restful sleep. Plus, that food is immediately stored as extra calories, and if you're not doing anything but sleeping, it's going to turn to fat. So that brings me to the next point. After your final meal, try and do something a little bit active. Not real aggressive, but something a little bit more active than sitting on the couch and working your thumb on the phone or the remote control. Take a walk. For years, I used to hear people say, go for a walk after dinner to help digest your meal. It's true. Do it. Just a little something to help the food digest and a little something to burn some of those calories. Now we're going to get to my favorite quick fat loss secret. I wrote a blog about this 8 or 9 months ago. It was called just that, My Favorite Quick Fat Loss Secret. It's a secret. You want to know what it is? Well, you guys are my friends, I can tell you. Drink water. Cut out all the empty calories in your diet, all that sugar, all that carbonation, all that excess fat. And I'm not talking about changing the way you eat, not at all. I'm talking about just eliminating all those beverages and drink water instead. When I was writing this blog post, well, actually what stimulated me to write this blog post was an article I stumbled across online that was called The 20 Worst Beverages in America. And it listed 20 different drinks, some of which you could buy on the shelf in a supermarket, some of which were from a fast food place, some of which were from that famous coffee place that started out in Seattle. And it showed the calories, the sugar, the fat content. And it was amazing to me. Let's just take a few of these items. I know a lot of people out there will say, well, you know, I don't drink soda anymore, but a lot of people still do. If they didn't, there wouldn't be several shelves of soft drinks in every supermarket. Your average 12-ounce can of soda has 39 grams of pure sugar, which translates to 160 calories. That's not a lot, I know, but most people don't drink one 12-ounce can of soda. They drink several in the course of a day. And if you go into a restaurant, not even a fast food place, just your regular restaurant, they don't give you a small glass anymore. Alehouse, Chili's, Fridays, those type of places, the big chains, I guess you'd call them high-end fast food, they give you this big 24 or 32-ounce mug bucket so they don't have to refill it several times. So forget that 12-ounce can. Now we're up to a 24-ounce can or a 32-ounce container. So we've tripled those calories. And most people drink a couple of those things. So we're talking 500, 600, 700, 800 calories just in a soda. Energy drinks, very popular. One little 8-ounce Red Bull has 130 calories. Again, not much, but most people consume more than one. And if you, here, let's take it by the week. Say you drink one Red Bull a day, 130 calories. That's 700 calories, 910 calories in a week. 1 pound of fat is 3,500 calories. So say you drink one Red Bull every single day. Just by eliminating that, you'll lose 1 pound of pure fat in 3 weeks. That's it. 3,500 calorie deficit is what you need to drop a pound of fat. Bear that in mind. Now let's talk about some of these other drinks. Those yummy mocha, cappuccino, frappe, latte things. They're not just full of sugar, they're full of fat. 600, 700, 800 calories in some of those drinks. Soda, let's go back to it. In addition to the sugars, you have the carbonation, which makes us all bloat. You could be skinny as can be and have that belly from the bloat from the soda. So nobody wants that. Fruit juices are no better. Ah, I hear people screaming. Yes, fruit juice can be healthy, but we're not talking about healthy right now. We're talking about eliminating extra simple sugary calories in your diet. Eat the fruit. Think about this. How many apples, oranges, grapes does it take to make one glass of juice? Now, could you sit down and eat all of that fruit? I'd be stuffed. Might have a tummy ache from it, honestly. But you drink that glass of juice, it's gone in a few seconds, you give it no thought, there's an extra couple hundred calories of pure sugar. Now, the worst offender on this list of the 20 worst drinks was a double thick chocolate shake from the land of the golden arches. Okay, I hear people going, I don't eat that. Well, some people do. If nobody eats it, they wouldn't still be in business. But my point is, 1,100 calories just in the milkshake. Let's do some math again. The average caloric intake requirement is 15 calories per pound of body weight to maintain your body weight. Not gain, not lose. And I'm saying average. There are always variables. So in round numbers, a 200-pound man needs 3,000 calories. A 100-pound woman needs 1,500 calories. You plug in the numbers for yourself. Now here we are. We've just ordered our 1,100-calorie chocolate shake. We came here. We didn't come here just for that. Got to have the burger. Got to have the fries to go with it. Man, that place has got great fries. And then the cute little kid behind the counter goes, would you like to supersize that for only $2 more? Such a deal, you can't turn it down. So now that 1,100 calorie shake is a 1,600, 1,700, 2,000 calorie meal. That's two-thirds of what that 200-pound man needs. That's more than what that 100-pound lady is supposed to consume in the whole day in one meal. So I've kind of gone off a little bit because I'm mentioning the other junk food involved there, but that chocolate shake is just brutal. Now, people, water. And I mean water. I don't mean vitamin water. Check the label on your vitamin water. There's not a lot of calories in there, but it's not totally calorie-free. So there you go. Drink water. Cut out maybe a couple thousand calories of pure sugar every week. You're going to feel better. Your digestion is going to be better. You'll have a little more energy. And you will start to drop some body fat without changing anything you eat. Simple as can be. In the future, we'll talk about other ways of improving your eating habits and other little tricks that'll help you in your fat loss goals. And I'll make them as painless as I can. Nobody likes pain. Nobody likes to suffer. It takes work, but I'll definitely point out as many simple little tweaks as I can. Now, on to today's featured guest. As I said before, he is a popular blogger, successful author with 5 books to his credit. His most recent, Zen Mind, Strong Body, was at the top of the Amazon best-selling charts in its category. He and his brother Danny are the only two master instructors for the Progressive Calisthenics Certification Program, and they travel all over the world certifying trainers in this means of exercise. And he is just one of the coolest people I've ever talked to. A lot of fun to talk to. Great guy. So now let's have a chat with Al Cavadlo. And my guest today, Al Cavadlo. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk with me, Al.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
It's a pleasure. Want to go a little bit into your background, then we'll talk about the books, and we'll talk about the PCC, and we'll talk about just about anything else that you feel like talking about.
Sounds great.
One thing I found real interesting when I talked to your brother Danny a few weeks back was that you're the younger brother, but you were the leader in the fitness industry, and he kind of followed after you.
Yeah, you know, when Danny and I were growing up, he was a big influence on me in a lot of ways, just, you know, shaping the person that I was. And I was the one who got started in the fitness industry first. And after having some success there, I kind of encouraged Danny to change careers and get into it too. So it was kind of interesting, you know, later on in life to kind of have the roles reversed, because he was always the big brother kind of showing me the ropes of things. And when he got started in fitness, I kind of got to do that for him. So I was kind of grateful for the opportunity to return that favor to him. And you know, now it's been a long time that Danny's been in the industry, and I kind of see us as peers at this point and have for a long time.
Well, your name is the one that comes to mind first still, but it's definitely his is right there. It's, you know, body weight training, Al Cavadlo, Danny Cavadlo. Oh, yeah, that coach guy. The mystery man.
I think coach has a little bit more recognition than that, but I'm very flattered.
Well, you know, you're tangible. Danny's tangible. Coach is a mystery man. Which is kind of cool.
That's part of his appeal, I think.
That's kind of cool, actually. So what was life like growing up in Brooklyn?
Oh, man. You know, I had a really good childhood. Danny and I were really fortunate that we had very loving, supportive parents. So we didn't have a lot in terms of, you know, we didn't have a lot of money and we didn't have a lot of things, but we had a lot of love in our house. And I think that that's more important. And a lot of good values were instilled in us very young, you know, showing up on time for things, working hard, not blaming others when things go wrong. These are such important life things that we had instilled in us from as early as I can remember.
Well, all of that will go a lot further than the money will. And usually when you come from a lot of money, you don't really, well, I shouldn't generalize, but a lot of people that I've known that have come from a lot of money and had it real easy growing up don't really respect and appreciate things quite as much.
That is sometimes the case, but thankfully we have a lot of appreciation for what we've accomplished because it was a long, hard road to get here.
Well, that's the thing that is appealing about both of you is you obviously did it yourselves. Nobody handed it to you. I guess the phrase would be carved out your niche in the fitness world.
Well, thanks very much, Bill. I appreciate that.
Well, it is what it is.
I like the expression, it is what it is. You know, it's a very Zen kind of expression. You know, I'm big on the Zen philosophy.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Enjoyed the new book very much. I just finished reading it yesterday. And actually, that's the kind of book I really enjoy where you get a compilation of a lot of little tastes of different things. A lot of different fitness authors that I read and that I'm aware of have done that. And my favorite book for Pavel is Beyond Bodybuilding. For Brooks Kubik is his book that's a compilation of his articles that were previously published. And now you've done the same thing. And I'm going to bet it's going to be your most popular seller.
Well, thanks. I hope so. I think as of now, Pushing the Limits is my best-selling title, but that one's had a little more time. So we'll see in a few years where everything's at.
Yeah. Pushing the Limits is a very good book. What's the other one? Raising the Bar. You like your little plays on words.
I do. I love puns. And you know, thankfully, my audience tends to appreciate that. So, you know, it's one of those things. There's so many people writing about fitness, and you've got to embrace your personality, and you'll find people who click with you. And that's sort of a big part of, I think, why I've been able to have a lot of success, is because I have a unique attitude and personality that people have responded to.
Well, there's nothing pretentious about you. You don't come off as an expert or an authority. You're Al, the bodyweight guy who can just do incredible things.
Thanks. So
you're not intimidating. Another figures in the industry try and put themselves above everybody else so they'll have the respect, but it kind of distances them, I think.
I agree. You know, and that's something that's important to me, and I'm glad that you've noticed that and commented on it, is that I don't want people to think like, oh, well, Al can do these things because he's this fitness guru, but I'll never be able to do that. So I want to demystify this stuff and say, hey, I'm just a person like anybody else, and if I can do this, then you can do it too.
Anybody can do it if they're willing to put in the time and the work.
Well said. That's for a lot of people, that's the hard part, is actually staying consistent.
Everybody starts. Everybody's a great starter, but actually getting to the midpoint of the race and finishing the race. How many
exactly.
People start the New York City Marathon and how many people actually finish it?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact statistics on that are, but I definitely get the point. And anyone even entering a marathon is probably pretty serious in the first place. And you're right, not even everyone can finish.
That's true. If they've actually gotten to the point to show up for the race, that's pretty serious.
That's doing better than a lot of people.
Yeah. Now, we already went off on a tangent, and I meant to ask, what did you do before fitness?
Ah, yes. Well,
work-wise.
You know, my first passion was music. And Danny and I both, you know, growing up, music was a big part of our household. Our dad was a musician and our mom was a teacher. So we all took music lessons and we were all very into that. And, you know, it's kind of cool because now I still get to do that a little bit on the side when I make my YouTube videos. A lot of people don't realize this, but I perform and write and record all the music in my videos myself, which is a nice way to avoid having to worry about royalties or getting music from other sources. But that was kind of my first passion. And, you know, Danny as well, and something that we talk about a lot, something he points out in his book, Everybody Needs Training, which is a book for aspiring personal trainers, is when you're trying to make it in the music industry, there's so much rejection and there's so much working for peanuts And so we got so used to that when we got into fitness, and it's like, wow, people are actually sometimes willing to pay you for your time, or it's so much harder to succeed in music because there's so much competition that instilled a lot of that hustle in us, you know, and we were able to parlay that into the fitness career.
What did you play? I know Danny's a drummer.
Yeah, I'm a drummer as well, and I also play guitar and I play bass and I play a little bit of keyboards.
Cool. Is either one of you a vocalist?
Not a very good one. But I've dabbled. I have a couple of YouTube videos in there where I have songs that I'm on vocals as well. So they're out there if you're looking for them.
I'm sure somebody's going to immediately go check that out now.
There's a okay. Video. It's a push-up battle video that I posted with me and Danny a few years ago. And there's an original soundtrack, and you can hear me doing some vocals on that one.
Oh, cool. I'm going to have to check it out. So who won the battle?
Yeah, check out the push-up battle.
So who won it?
You know, that's one of those things. I guess it's kind of ambiguous. We leave it up to the viewer to draw their own conclusions.
Okay. It wasn't a matter of who gets the most reps and one of you crashed and one of you kept going?
No, it was kind of, you'll enjoy this video, Bill. It's kind of a lighthearted romp, not so much about competition, but about inspiring the viewer to try some new variations.
Oh, okay. Excellent. I can appreciate that because straight, normal push-ups like we were taught back in school get real old.
I mean, they certainly have a time and a place, and they're a great foundational exercise. But right, when you've been doing calisthenics long enough, there comes a time when you need to progress yourself and continue to challenge your body.
Well, you know, since you brought that up, let's kind of go in that direction. A lot of people who are more casual about body weight, even people that are hardcore ironheads, hardcore gym people, they'll go, oh, body weight, it's push-ups and squats. Can you kind of just briefly outline how you would make push-ups harder or some more aggressive approaches to a body weight squat? Not going all the way to a pistol, but just taking a regular two-legged body weight squat and making it more aggressive, or a regular push-up and making it more aggressive?
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. And you're right. That is a common misconception that people have about calisthenics. People think it's too easy for them once they can do a lot of push-ups and squats. Oh, well, then what? And then what is you adjust the leverage. As far as the push-up goes, there's a few different ways that you can do that. And, you know, I teach a certification in this, the Progressive Calisthenics Certification. We delve a lot deeper into these principles of progression there. But just to give you a little bit of a taste of that, something as simple as just putting more weight in your hands by elevating your feet is a very simple way to make a push-up more difficult. You can also play around with instability by making one hand higher or lower than the other by elevating it on an object, or bring your hands closer together. You know, like a diamond push-up is generally harder for people than with the hands a little wider. And also putting the hands lower under the shoulders, more down toward the hips, is another way to do it. So right there, that's a few ways that you can take a basic push-up and automatically make it more challenging without having to really add much to it.
Okay. And just real quickly, can you throw the same thing out there for a squat?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can take your stance. And for some people, bringing it into a narrower stance is going to make it a little bit more difficult. Other times, people are going to find a wider stance is going to be more challenging. And then we've got a whole bunch of, you know, you mentioned the pistol squat earlier, but you're right. If someone's not ready for a pistol squat, there's a whole bunch of in-between steps they can do, either using a step or a box to kind of sit back onto if they don't have the balance to do a pistol yet. Or using a pole or a door frame or something to hold with your hands and kind of walk yourself up and down so you can kind of assist your leg by using your arms a little bit.
Okay, and for anyone who doesn't know what a pistol squat is, essentially it's a one-legged squat with your non-working leg held out in front of you off the floor.
Exactly.
Okay. You mentioned the PCC, so let's go there, kind of going totally out of the order I had in my mind, but that's all right. Never goes the way I plan it.
That's life, though, right? You got to be willing to improvise.
Who came up with the idea of a calisthenics certification? Was that Dragon Door?
It was kind of the brainchild of Paul Wade and John Duquesne. And, you know, the Convict Conditioning book that we mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, that came out, I think, in 2009. And that was really a pivotal book in getting body weight training to be something that more people were aware of and taking more seriously. And as that book started to grow and build a cult following, that now has kind of become even bigger than just a cult following. it became clear that there was a demand for an in-person experience to kind of go along with it. And, you know, as we were discussing, Coach Wade prefers to be anonymous. So when he and John were cooking up this idea, it was kind of a question of, well, who are we going to get to teach this thing? And soon after that, Coach came across me and Danny on the web, and, you know, we started corresponding, and it just kind of happened organically from there. They felt that we were competent instructors and would be able to convey this material to people in a workshop setting. And we were really excited for the opportunity. And it was just one of those things that everything, just all the pieces of the puzzle just came together really nicely.
So you and Danny basically are the PCC. You are the only two master instructors, and all the other instructors were trained by you, I gather.
Pretty much, yeah. But, you know, the PCC, it's so much bigger than me and Danny. You know, we've certified hundreds of instructors by this point all over the world, and that's what the PCC is. Yes, we're kind of the face of the community, but it's about the community more than it's about us as individuals.
Right, but you guys basically started it, and your senior instructors that are under you were all people that you and Danny trained personally.
I mean, to certain extents. I mean, our team, a lot of these people came in with a lot of experience before Danny and I met them or worked with them. But yeah, it's only people whose training methodologies are in, you know, harmony with what Danny and I are doing.
Mm-hmm. And who created the curriculum? And more importantly, who came up with that insane pass and test? The Centurion?
the Century test. It's 100 reps. You got 8 minutes to do it. It's 40 body weight squats, 30 push-ups. Women are allowed to do knee push-ups. The third exercise is the hanging knee raise, and the last exercise is the pull-up. So it's 40 squats, 30 push-up, 20 knee raises, 10 pull-ups. And for the women, we let them do a pull-up modification. And all 100 reps have to be done in 8 minutes, and each set of each exercise has to be an unbroken, continuous set. And, you know, it's kind of, I think, a good baseline for just establishing competency in calisthenics. You know, if you're going to be teaching this to other people, you need to be able to do those basics very well and have, a good foundation there. As far as coming up with the curriculum, it was, a combined effort between Coach Wade and myself and Danny and John Duquesne. We had a lot of different ideas, and it was kind of, well, we want to kind of give people an overview of a large skill set. And so we went back and forth with a lot of different emails, a lot of different ideas about what was going to be included. And ultimately, I'm really happy with what we came up with. And the curriculum has even been modified a little bit from the first workshop we did. We learned a few things and tweaked it a little bit. And now we've got it. I think it's a really, really solid curriculum.
Just my one thought on the Century test is, I'm doing fine with the push-ups. I'm doing fine with the squats. I'm doing fine with the knee raises. Now, I've just hung there and done 20 hanging knee raises. My grip is tired. My shoulders are tired. My lats are tired from staying stable. And now I got to do 10 pull-ups.
Well, that's the challenge of it. You know, we want people to be able to do those 10 pull-ups even when they're tired. And that's why they're put at the end. And, you know, we do let people come off the bar between the knee raises and the pull-ups, shake out their grip for a little bit, recover a little. But yeah, we want people who are really solid on their pull-ups. And if you can't do 10 pull-ups when you're already tired, then we don't think you're worthy of having the PCC credential. You know, it's one of those things, we take it seriously, and we don't want people walking around representing our brand unless they can, walk the walk, as it were.
See, that's one of the things that's great about, here's my little commercial for Dragon Door. It's one of the things that I think that's great about all of the certifications through Dragon Door is you actually physically have to be able to do something. It's not sitting at home on your computer, filling out a open book, multiple choice test, and $400 later, oh, I'm now certified, whatever.
Exactly. You know, and that's one of those things. I get emails from people sometimes saying, hey, can I take the PCC online? I can't actually get there in person. I'm always like, no, that's the whole thing. It has to be an in-person experience. This cannot be done in any other context. And, you know, there's something about actually being face-to-face with people that's just, it's just a unique thing that can't be replicated in any other medium.
And it's all about the being able to lead by example as well, I believe.
Absolutely, absolutely. If we can't see these people in person and actually, you know, verify that they're capable of doing this stuff with our own eyes in the flesh, then I can't give someone my seal of approval.
Yeah, I've known plenty of personal trainers over the years, and I'm sure you have too, that were just in abysmal shape. They had the knowledge, maybe, but they couldn't go through a decently hard workout, whether it be a weight training or a body weight workout. So it's really important that the leading by example thing is there. It's much more motivating than dealing with a trainer that you just saw at McDonald's stuffing French fries in his mouth 15 minutes ago.
Absolutely, Bill. I agree completely.
So since I just went to that little segue to McDonald's, what's your nutrition like?
You know, well, I definitely do not eat at McDonald's. And I generally try to avoid overly processed, Frankenfoods. But I don't have a lot of very strict dietary guidelines either. Basically, I try to keep it simple. I try to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I eat a lot of meat. I do eat dairy. I like nuts. I like peanut butter a lot. I talk about that a little bit in my latest book. And generally, it's just one of those things that if you eat only clean, fresh, real whole foods, you don't have to give yourself a lot of restrictions beyond that.
Yeah, our grandparents and great-grandparents didn't know anything about diet, and they seem to do okay.
You know, that's a good rule. I think it's the author Michael Pollan talks about if your grandma wouldn't know what it was, don't eat it. And I think that's a great piece of advice.
There's that, and there's if you look at the label and you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
That's a good one, too.
Because I always use the example to people, look at a thing of margarine or some other butter substitute and read me all those nice big words. And then look at the label on a package of butter. Butter, salt, milk, water.
Right.
And that's about
it. It's amazing how many people are so ignorant about what they're putting in their bodies and purposefully ignorant, almost like, I don't even want to go there sort of thing. But it's you got to educate yourself on this stuff. And like you said, sometimes it's just as simple as actually just looking at the ingredients on the food you're eating.
I think that's another one of those, if I don't look at it, it's not there things. Because if you read the ingredients, you're going to go, oh, God.
Yeah, a lot of people choose to stay in the dark about things because they can't handle the truth.
It's easier.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk about the books. I know the new book is the main concern because that's the new book, but let's start at the very beginning. The only one I'm really not familiar with is the first book, We're Working Out.
Yeah, I self-published that book back in 2010. You know, I'd been a personal trainer for a long time at that point, and I had a lot of clients who kept saying to me, Al, you've got to write a book. You've got so many great ideas that are so different than what so many other people out there in fitness are saying. I started my blog in 2009 and started, you know, putting some content up there. And, it, you know, in the early days, there wasn't a lot of people viewing the stuff. But, you know, you keep putting it out there, and you hopefully over time it grows a little bit. And a lot of those early blog posts kind of wound up getting reformatted into that first book I self-published. And, you know, a lot of content that was never on the blog is in there as well. And I self-published that one because I was trying to find a publisher and no one was interested in it. And I said, well, hey, I really believe in this product, so I'm just going to take it upon myself to put it out there anyway. And that was kind of a big step for me, taking that chance. And it wound up working out really well because people responded well to the book. And it wound up falling into the hands of Coach Paul Wade, which is how he first came to discover me and my philosophy and realize that he and I were on the same page with a lot of things.
Is it still out there?
Yeah, you can still get that book. It's on Amazon. They do. There's an ebook version you can get and download, but they do like a print on demand thing. So if you want to actually get a print copy, they'll just print one out and send it over to you. But there isn't a warehouse full of those anymore.
Okay. But it's still available. Okay. I'm going to have to do that because I'm very curious about that one now.
And I'm really proud of that book. And I'm you know, it's one of those things when you're a writer or someone who creates anything, you always look back on something you did a year or three ago and you're like, oh, God, this is terrible. I would do it so differently now. And there's definitely some things in that first book that I feel that way about. But even, you know, over 5 years after I wrote it, I still look back and I feel pretty good about what I said in there.
Well, your basic core concepts, you may have refined things as time goes on, yeah. But I'm sure your basic core concepts have not changed. So
that's a really good word. And that's what it is. It's refining. It's just gradually tweaking it and cleaning it up and getting the message clearer and clearer.
You know, I've talked with people that have been training for 30, 40 years and training other people for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And most of the ones that are really good at what they do are very quick to say, I'm still learning.
A good teacher must be a student first.
Ah, sounding very Zen again.
There we go.
Okay, let's talk about the second book, which was a Dragon Door publication by that point, correct?
Yes, that was Raising the Bar. And, you know, but in between my self-published book and Raising the Bar is when I appeared in Convict Conditioning 2. And that kind of exposed me to a much larger audience. And it kind of got my foot in the door with Dragon Door. And I was able to pitch John on Raising the Bar, which I had already started writing at that point. And again, I was pretty much planning on just self-publishing that one too, because I had had a decent amount of success self-publishing the first one. But, you know, John was very interested in that book, and it wound up being, I thought in my best interest to go with a more recognizable publisher, and I have no regrets about that decision. It was a good move. That book is all about things you can do with a pull-up bar. So it's taking the concept of minimalism and really running with it. And a lot of people are under the misconception that pull-ups are the only thing to do with a pull-up bar. But I go into a lot of different dip variations and hanging leg raise variations and lever progressions in that book. So it's really a very thorough apparatus that you can train your whole upper body and not really need anything else. And that's pretty much the thesis of that book.
Okay, so it sounds like it's a very advanced type of book. If I've never done a pull-up in my life and I hate pull-ups, but I'm over it. I want to do pull-ups. Does this book
I think
take
this would be a very good book for someone in that situation. You know, it is, as far as the exercises and the programs in there, it is a little advanced for some people, but it does start in at the beginning. In the first chapter, I'm talking about, okay, so what do you do if you can't do a pull-up? What steps can you take to get there? So there is some stuff in there for the beginner, but then, like you said, the later chapters in the book do get pretty out there, pretty advanced, getting into things like muscle-ups and training for a one-arm pull-up and front levers and things like that. I think that the book has value in it for beginners as well, not just because of those early progressions, but so much of my philosophy comes through in the book. And whether you're a beginner or whether you're an advanced practitioner, I think a lot of the philosophical aspects of the book can be helpful and relevant for anyone.
Okay. Next book.
The next one after that was Pushing the Limits, Total Body Strength with No Equipment. So I mentioned, you know, minimalism being a big part of what I do, and Raising the Bar was a minimalist manifesto on that. It was only one piece of equipment. But I wanted to take that even further with the next book and say, okay, so what if you don't have a pull-up bar? What can you do with just your body and the floor? And as I joke in the book, if you don't have a floor, well, you've got much bigger problems.
Yes, I saw that in one of the interviews I was looking at yesterday that you did. And I like that line. I love that line. Unfortunately, I was laughing when I heard that line while I was hanging on my inversion table, and it really wasn't funny. It was like, I'm trapped.
I encourage people to be sitting down in a chair so that if they laugh, they're not going to put themselves at risk when they read any of my stuff. Or at least standing up, you know, maybe not sitting in a chair. Right?
Okay, so there is a warning somewhere in the book. It should be like maybe on the cover, you know, for your own safety. Don't operate heavy machinery while reading this book.
No inversion tables while reading this book. I'll have to stick that in the next one. And then when you read that, Bill, you'll be like, oh, that's because of me. That's why it says that in there.
I'll feel honored. Then we went to the stretching book, which I found real interesting because lately everybody's into movement, into mobility, rather than into pure flexibility.
Yeah, you know, Stretching Your Boundaries was one of those books that I wanted to write exactly like you said, because I felt there was so much information out there that was very easy to misinterpret, or that in some cases was just flat out, you know, incorrect, at least in my experience of the world. So I wanted to kind of put my take on it out there. And it's also one of those things, a lot of the time people get very into these subcategories of fitness. So it's like, oh, well, I do calisthenics, but that's yoga. And this thing over here is gymnastics. And this up there, that's martial arts. And down here, we have dance. And it's kind of, I wanted to make a point about how movement is kind of bigger than any of these little modalities. And a lot of the stuff in that book is borrowed from a lot of different things. And I'm saying, hey, look, yes, this is a yoga stretch, but you know what? It might actually help you get better at your calisthenics game. So I wanted to free people up from that thinking in that very narrow scope.
Okay. So just for clarification, is it about static stretching or is it about movement and mobility stuff or is it a combination?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, most of the exercises in the book that are presented are static holds. There is a section on dynamic stretching in there too. And a big part of what I think makes this book unique is I try to relate a lot of the stretches specifically to how they're going to benefit a particular aspect of your calisthenics game. Like, for example, we talked about the pistol squat before. For a lot of people, that's as much a mobility challenge as it is a strength challenge to be able to get down that deep on one leg. And there's a lot of stretches in this book that I think will supplement the pistol training really nice for people. And not just the pistol, but a lot of different bodyweight movements. I'm kind of trying to give people ways to supplement their training to help them get toward that objective.
And for the people out there that are into weight training, not just calisthenics and bodyweight, but the guys that are into weight training or the ladies that are into weight training, stretching will enhance your strength. If you have greater flexibility, you're going to reduce your potential for injury, and you're actually going to get stronger because if you stretch between sets, it helps you recover.
You know, it's one of those things. There's a lot of different people with different opinions on this stuff, but I agree with you. And it's also to a certain extent, if you're really tight and you can't even get down into a deep full squat, how are you going to get the full strength benefits of doing a weighted squat? But at the same time, and I acknowledge this in the book, at a certain point, if you're dealing with hypermobility, people wanting to, you know, do full splits and things beyond that, then at a certain point, you may have to make some strength sacrifices. I mean, it's very rare that you see someone who's, you know, got a barbell back squat that's, you know, 2.5 times their body weight and can also get into a full side split and a full front split. So sometimes different goals do, you know, you have to pick and choose. You can't be the best at everything. But yes, people who have limited mobility, be it in their hips or their shoulders or their spine, are usually going to have a hard time fully utilizing strength building exercises.
Okay, so then we see a purpose for everything. And it's not, as you said, the body weight guy and the weight guy and the cardio guy. It's your training should have a taste of a variety of modalities. Okay, if you want to be a strength training person, you want to lift heavy iron, there still should be a little bit of cardio. There still should be a little bit of mobility. There still should be a taste of different things just to keep the balance in your body, keep your body healthy so you can excel at whatever it is you want to excel at.
I'm all about being well-rounded. And, you know, a lot of the time it's easy for people to want to get into these debates about, oh, weights are better than body weight. No, body weight's better than weights. No, machines are better than both of them. No, machines are bad. And really, we all have a lot more in common than we have, you know, in opposition. We're all trying to get stronger, get healthier, feel better, and ultimately do things that we enjoy. So different people are going to gravitate towards different modalities, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I don't want people to think, oh, Al says weight training is bad, I only do body weight. Because I think anything that anyone's doing to improve their fitness is great. But at a certain point, if you specialize too much, then you are going to limit yourself.
What's in the immediate and long-term future? Are we going to see anything else happening with the PCC? Is there another book on the plans?
Yes,
other than the book that
yes.
just came out? Okay.
The PCC calendar for 2015 is pretty busy. We're going to be going to a whole bunch of different cities and countries throughout this year. We've got workshops lined up in Germany, Italy, Ireland. We're going to make our first PCC in the UK this year. We're going back to Holland. We were there last fall. And we've got a bunch in the States also. We're doing New York. We're doing Dallas. We're doing California. So we're trying to make our way to as many different places as possible with this thing. And yeah, I'm planning on putting out another book in 2016. I haven't started working on it yet. Well, I've kind of been working on it a little bit, but I haven't really delved into it. But I've got plenty of time because it's Zen Mind Strong Body just came out. So I want to let that one breathe a little bit first.
I'm going to just throw something at you because I've recently read a few books that were published by another fitness publishing company, and they did something I really enjoyed. They offered the book in, you know, a hard copy. They offered it in e-form, but they also offered it with the author reading it. Have you ever given any thought, because with your personality, your whole philosophy and your approach to everything would come through so good if you were reading this book instead of you know, somebody just reading it in their mind.
Yeah, you know, the audiobook is definitely a medium that's becoming more and more popular. And it's actually funny that you mentioned that, because I was just having this conversation with John Duquesne the last time I saw him about do we think that an audiobook is a viable thing, and is it worth our while to do this? And we haven't really made a final decision about that yet. So if there are people who would like that, definitely write to Dragondor and let them know of your interest. Because, you know, at the end of the day, this stuff is a business. And if we're going to put out a product like that, it needs to be profitable. Otherwise, it's not really a viable thing. But if there's enough demand and enough interest, it would be something I would very much like to do.
Well, the creation cost for an audiobook would obviously be much higher than creating an ebook or Kindle book. But just, and it wouldn't be a good thing for every author, but with somebody with a voice like yours and a personality like yours, it would work just as well for you and for your brother, because you guys sound a little alike and you got the same kind of attitude. And I think that real world thing and just your personality would shine through it. And I think it would make an even better read just based on that. But yep, the economics are the bottom line.
Yeah, but thanks so much. I really appreciate hearing that. And I do think it is something, whether it happens with Zen Mind Strong Body or with another title down the line, I do think that ultimately that is something that will wind up happening.
Okay, we've covered the books. We've talked about the PCC. We've talked a little about you. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up at this point?
You know, I think we've been pretty thorough. I just wanted to reiterate a point that I made earlier about, you know, people arguing over some of the little details. It's unfortunate, because so much of the world doesn't exercise at all. And we have an obesity epidemic that's completely out of control. And the small segment of the population that is into fitness, we need to be focused on being positive and trying to inspire people who aren't exercising to move and to change their lives, rather than arguing with each other about, oh, this is better than that. No, you're stupid for doing it this way. My way is the only way to do it. It's all good. As long as people are exercising and challenging themselves and enjoying it and progressing, it doesn't matter to me whether they like my methods or whether they like someone else's methods better. We all have a lot in common, and we're all just trying to inspire people and be positive and get the world moving.
I think the best method is the one you're actually going to enjoy and actually do.
Well said.
Because if you absolutely hate lifting weights, you're not going to do it. If you hate running, you couldn't pay me to run. But I can spend all the time in the world in the gym. So it's just finding the modality that is the one that is fun for you. Because this has all got to be fun. It should never be drudgery.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's the same thing in lots of other industries too. You know, in music or in art, you get people bickering about, no, I like this person's work. No, I hate that person's work. But it's like we're all trying to promote positivity. So why be negative about it?
Because people tend to like that more.
I don't know why. It's unfortunate.
It's a waste of energy.
You know,
it's a huge waste of energy.
Here we are wasting energy complaining about people complaining too much. So
you're right.
The irony is not lost on me.
And I think that is an excellent place to wrap this up. This is Bill. We've been talking with author, PCC master instructor, and general bodyweight guru Al Cavadlo. And check out his books if you're interested in becoming certified as a calisthenics instructor. There is only one certification that counts, the PCC. And I believe Danny or Al is at virtually every one of them. And
both of us are at all.
Ah, man, that makes for a rough schedule. Okay, well, check out his blog. What's the email address or the blog address, Al?
It's just my name. It's just alcavadlo.com. And if you Google me, all you need to put in, I think, is Al, K-A-V, and Google will know you're looking for me.
Okay, that's simple enough. Check out his stuff. It's definitely worth the time. Appreciate you giving me the time today, Al.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed talking with Al. He's a great guy. Totally unassuming, very real, down-to-earth guy. You would never know he is probably one of the two or three best in the world at what he does. He's just a nice, easygoing guy. And he writes exactly the way he talks. If you have interest in learning more about body weight training, you're not interested in joining a gym, you're not interested in using weights, but you do want to get fitter and stronger, I'd recommend any one of Al's books. They're easy to read, easy to follow along, and a good read. Good, lots of good material in all of his books, and I'd also check out his blog. If you enjoyed this interview, there is another interview on my website, kosiabafitness.com, with his older brother Danny. And now let's talk about next week's guest. My guest next week has the most popular fat loss book on Amazon for the past several weeks. His name is Josh Hillis, and he wrote a book called Fat Loss Happens on Monday. We originally recorded this interview back in November, and the book was released in December, and I couldn't be happier with the amount of success that Josh has experienced. It's a great book, it's an easy read, and it's the kind of book I want to promote here on Real World Fitness because it's real. There's no crazy crash diets. You're not going to feel like you're suffering when you're following Josh's program. It's just a very practical, intelligent way of learning how to eat better, how to accept the days you mess up, and just improved eating and improved health. It's a great book. It's a long interview, so you guys get lucky. You won't hear very much of my voice next week. So that's Fat Loss Happens on Monday with Josh Hillis. That's next week here on the Real World Fitness Podcast. This is Bill saying have an awesome week. I'll talk to you soon.